What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with Lotus of Doom, like regular. And Lotus, I've got a question for you.
All right. I'm open to it. What do we got?
All right. Have you ever heard of a guy named Tiber Septim?
No, you haven't.
That is not the answer I was expecting.
Yeah, there you go. No, definitely aren't. There isn't a currency named after him in the game or anything. So totally new to me. Okay, yes.
What about Talos?
Again, you know, it's
Talos Stormcrown. Like, does that ring memories? Does that ring a bell? Hjalti Earlybeard. Have you heard of that guy?
All right. So, jokes aside, that name is weird. I've always thought that one is a weird moniker for him. Mm-hmm. I get it. It's, you have an early beard, you're young type of thing. Hjalti Earlybeard was always...
He had a beard at the age of 4.
Like, yeah. What? It's because it's that, like,
I don't
really,
know that that's
like,
true.
You got a
I've just
space
picked a
in your mustache because it doesn't connect and it's like straggly.
It's like the little sides where my mustache doesn't quite reach my beard.
It doesn't quite connect.
It's like a little
almost there,
but not really. Not really.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That name always is weird to me, given his myriad of monikers that we're about to go through.
Yeah. So, okay. So if any of you are new to the series and don't know who Talos or Tiber Septim are or have seen them in Skyrim, the statues, the whole plot line with, like, people want to worship him, other people are like, no, he's not a legitimate god, all of that stuff. That's what we're talking about today. In fact, we're not going to talk about the ascension into godhood stuff. We're not going to talk so much about the conquest. We're not going to go in detail about the conquest of the Empire and the beginning of the Third Age. I'm more interested in this episode into who exactly is Talos or Tiber Septim or Hjalti Earlybeard, and who are these other characters in and around them, and how does any of this stuff make sense? So, in order to go into this, I hope that you are tuned in. Welcome to our live stream. Those of you on the live stream, I hope you're here for the live stream. If you are just listening on the audio version of the podcast, you might want to pop in to the YouTube version that will be up on our YouTube channel, the Elder Scrolls Lorecast YouTube channel, because I came with visual aids. I've got visual aids. I've got a little pop character here. This is the Dovahkiin pop character. And I've got some other ones in order to help try to keep all the names straight. So you ready for this, Lotus?
All right. Before we get started, because this is going to be terrible for the audio side of it.
It is on the back
of his helmet.
Oh, yeah. Somebody put a kick me note on it.
Okay, perfect. I was like, it looked like a kick me sign.
I didn't
expect it to be a kick me sign. Okay.
Yeah, I think
so
it was a joke
kick me
my
sign.
Son
there
played
go,
at some point.
On the audio.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, just this is just for a visual, and I'll refer to them by name, but I'll hold up certain ones in order for you to keep them straight. But here we got to start off somewhere.
I feel like
somewhere.
Luigi was a weird choice. That
yeah, Luigi's here too.
It's fine. We're going to gloss
Luigi's
over
here.
That.
I mean, I only have so many of these little characters. I've got Luigi. I've got... Got Pikachu here. I've got Diablo. Diablo's joining us. He's here too. Mike,
great.
The liar. I brought him. Oh, I've got a glowing ghoul. All right. These are all going to serve a purpose. So don't worry. This is going to make sense.
Really appreciate this.
So, okay. So let's talk about Tiber Septim. The first thing that we have to understand about Tiber Septim is that there are two competing stories as to who Tiber Septim actually is. Right? We've got...
Are you trying to tell me something isn't cut and dry in the Elder Scrolls?
Yeah, something is not cut and dry in the Elder Scrolls, right? So there is the orthodox view of who Tiber Septim is. This mostly comes from the Pocket Guide to the Empire. It's one of those books that we reference a lot on the show. And then there is the Arcturian Heresy version of who Tiber Septim actually is. And we're not talking about the whole thing that happens again at the end of the story, at the end of his life, the ascending into godhood.
Later.
We'll do that stuff later. I'm mostly interested in this beginning of the story stuff. So we're going to start out by reading just take this little clip from the UESP, Friends of the Show, that kind of summarizes the orthodoxy view. You can always go back and read the Pocket Guide to the Empire. There, in fact, this quotes some parts of that directly, but here's where this starts off. All right, so here we go. Tiber Septim, we're starting with the name Tiber Septim, was born in Atmora. Tiber Septim, I've got a little Dovahkiin right here, was born in Atmora, the continent north of Skyrim, north of Tamriel, under the name Talos. So this is now I'm going to hold up Luigi. Luigi is Talos, right? So you got Tiber Septim, known originally as Talos from Atmora. This also means Storm Crown in old Elnofex. This is another place where Elnofex is used.
There's another version of it?
Yeah, this actually shows up.
Miss this when
I don't know. It didn't come up in searches, but the Pocket Guide to the Empire mentions ancient Elnofey, the UESP, they say old Elnofex, which confirms my assumption that means the language of the Elnofey.
The language of the Elnofey, right, sure.
Right, so he spent his youth in Skyrim, so he came over from Atmora, where he learned the ancient art of the tongues, as well as the strategies of war from the chieftains there. At the age of 20, he led an invasion of old Hroldan, taking it back from the Witchmen of High Rock. Basically, there was a lot of infighting at this time. We've got the Interregnum. You have the period of time that we're going through in Elder Scrolls Online, where you have all of these different groups who are against each other, and everything continues to descend for another like 300 years into chaos.
Right.
Right.
And continues the idea that this time period in the actual series just is hyper nebulous. Like, I mean, there's a lot of gray area in the series, and it's really, really gray during the Interregnum, especially with the burnings of the books and records and stuff like that. This is
right.
Even more up for debate. The series is already known for.
Right. So you have some of the Nords are against the Reachmen. There's some fighting there. There are Kolovians who are trying to fight for the remnants of the Empire, who are against some of those people. There's just all of this stuff going back and forth. So out of seemingly nowhere from Edmora comes Talos. Da 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 da. Luigi. He shows up. He takes control of some armies. He fights back some of the Reachmen. Everyone's like, oh, he's a wonderful leader of men. He also seems to be able to shout, because it says here, soon after, growing storms made it known that the Greybeards were about to speak. This is one of the signs that like Talos came by, you know, following the storms. Storm Crown is what Talos actually means. As nearby villages were being evacuated, Talos traveled up the mountains the Greybeards called home, where they removed their gags and spoke his name, causing the world to shake. This should all sound very familiar, because it seems very similar to what happens in Skyrim.
Right? Very Skyrim-esque.
Very Skyrim.
Also, just throwing it out there, Stormcrown, chef's kiss of a title. That's a great one.
Right. Like the crown that comes with the storm, the coming storm.
It's just like, I can imagine anywhere that Talos is incoming. It's just like, oh, you got like the ominous clouds of it's like, oh, are we about to get like a snow squall or something like that? And it's just like,
right.
Oh, nope. It's just Talos.
Yeah. So imagine Luigi marching to victory behind storm clouds.
Exactly.
There you go. So that's Talos. The Greybeards told Talos that he would come to rule Tamriel, but he must go south to do so. Before he left, he learned the secrets of the high peak winds, the roar of the winter blast, and the warm silk of the summer updrafts. When he descended from the mountains, he came riding the clouds, striding through the air in great boots he claimed were gifts of the Greybeards for his cunning craft in riddling. So Luigi comes floating down from the sky, right? As this now prophesied hero of the Greybeards, who also shouts and is a dragonborn and all of that. You following so far?
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
Pretty straightforward. Yep.
Okay. Talos became general of the Kolovian estates under King and later Emperor Kulakane. General Talos met the combined army of Skyrim and High Rock, who were hostile to Kulakane, on the field of Sankrator. When they saw him use the Thum, the shouts, right? Skyrim's army joined with Talos. Basically, all of the Nords were like, holy crap, he's a dragonborn. We're going to get on your side, buddy. We're giving up.
We're not fighting that.
We're not fighting against you. We're going to join your team.
Yeah.
Recognize him as the son of Skyrim and heir to the empires of men because of the whole, you know, prophecy and everything about
the
coming of the Dragonborn and all of that. The Bretons of High Rock saw things differently. In the second era, 854, a Reachman Nightblade managed to kill Emperor Kulakain and slit Talos's throat. There's this whole thing where this assassin came and he barely escaped. So poor Luigi here gets his throat slit, but seems to survive, according to this version.
I really wish we had a visual aid for the Breton Nightblade. Like, and I wish that. Do you have a Kirby? Because I feel like that would be the.
Oh,
best
I do have a Kirby, but it's in the other room. All right, so
I was
Dog Meat.
Like,
Dog Meat shows up.
Okay, Dog
Meat shows up and like slits his throat.
Dog Meat's pretty good because I was going to say I was thinking we need something super wholesome to slit Talos's throat.
Yeah, Dog Meat shows up. Slits the throat. Oh, and then Talos falls over. Blah, and he's dying, but he shouts him away. Blah, and flies away.
Beautiful, beautiful visual aid.
I knew this would come in really handy.
This is already peak episode right now.
Yeah, yeah. So you might be wondering, if you play ESO, where did the term Nightblade come from for the class? Well, here you go.
Yeah, it's been a term since the very beginning. You one of the classes you can choose in the Elder Scrolls 1 arena is a Nightblade.
There you go.
It's totally been a thing since the very beginning.
Yeah, and you might be wondering, Talos, Tiber Septim, when did those names show up in the series? Because Lotus and I go back through all the different games, and they are different characters and different concepts that show up as the games evolved. Talos, Tiber Septim, shows up in arena. The series has been about him from the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's only expanded that in very confusing ways since then.
Right. Him and his myriad of progeny.
Right. All right. So it says, while the wound did not kill him, he could no longer use the voice and went on to command Tamriel with a whisper. So I guess he doesn't shout him away. I was embellishing there. He whispers him away. He goes, get out of here. And he goes, okay. And then he leaves. Right. So
it's pretty good, though, that like even when your throat is slit and you can't have this super voice that is in the series from Dragonborns and anybody that controls the Thum, when you're so good at it, the whisper is impactful enough to still be like concerned. It's like, wow, all right, that's not even just it's like advanced Dragonborn
powers, even just in whispers. So from that point on, he finally takes the name Tiber Septim. So Talos becomes Tiber Septim. He puts on his cool looking gear and looks like a pop bobblehead looking dude. And then finally, he's now emperor, and he moves on and does the whole like emperor thing. It says here he took the Cyrodiilic name Tiber Septim because it sounds like a name from Cyrodiil, as well as Ysmir, the dragon of the north. The Nordic name of kings, right? So he's claiming to be the coming ruler that everybody had foreseen and is going to unite the entire continent.
Which is, you know, it wouldn't be the first time somebody decides to make a prophecy seem like it's about them, except so far, it seems like he's got a little more of the credentials to back it up so far, right out the gate. You come in and you're already this impactful. It's kind of hard to be like, I don't know about that. This guy could be a pretender. He's got a pretty strong claim right out the gates here.
Right. And so chat's talking about the big robot. So he goes, moves on. He decides, oh, maybe I should attack Morrowind's. And then there's whole conversations about that with his high archmage, Zurn Arctus, who is now Mike the Liar.
Okay.
And
that one won't be confusing.
We're not going to dig into this too much, but basically he's convinced to negotiate with the tribunal, and in the negotiation basically wins this big deal where he's able to take the Numidium, which the Dwemer made and didn't seem to work anymore because the Heart of Lorkhan was missing. But so they were like, okay, you can take the Numidium. And then he ends up figuring out a way to use that by basically Zurn Arctus creates a gem that will power it, and then a soul is input into that gem. But we're going to get into that later. So there's
just before we get away from that, I would like to just point out the fact that that is like one of the best, like somebody downplays the use of something. It's like one man's trash is another's treasure.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, well, I mean, what's he going to do with it? Oh, no.
Yeah, right. You can't power this thing. This thing used to be powered with the Heart of Lorkhan. That's totally gone. It's not here
like
anymore.
Like, nerd. And right. Oh, crap. And it's like that is a real, that's a big 4D chess move to be like, yeah, no, actually, we got this. It's fine. It's now we have a giant Doom robot.
Yep. So that's where things go. We're not going to dig into that stuff too much. We're just going to reference it a little bit because that is the orthodox view of who Tiber Septim is and where he came from. He was Talos from Edmora, yada, yada, yada. But as with anybody who writes history, they write history in the way that favors their view of history and benefits them the most. So when it comes to especially something like a religious perspective, and this is coming from somebody who has studied religion, has a degree in it, most versions of your religion favor the current people who are writing it more than the actual literal truth of what has actually happened in the past, because a lot of that stuff is lost, or at the time there was some other stuff going on and they don't really want to mention it. But there's this other book, The Arcturian Heresy, and it is about a different character. It's not about Talos. It is about Hjalti Earlybeard, here represented by Pikachu.
Perfect.
Yeah, so Pikachu is Hjalti Earlybeard, and it says, according to the book titled The Arcturian Heresy, Hjalti Earlybeard was born on the Isle of Alcair in High Rock. High Rock is not at Mora.
Certainly is not.
No, and here's the other thing with this. If he was a man from at Mora, then he would be 100% man, not elf, not beast race. But if he comes from Alcair in High Rock, then he is probably Breton, which is part elf, part man.
Right.
Which totally changes the story. That totally puts
really
a different spin
different
on
direction.
It. Yes. So he comes from Hjalti Earlybeard comes from the island of Alcair in High Rock amid rumors of a warlord destined to rule Tamriel. Same stories. Yeah. All of that. He rose
another
to prominence.
Prophecy, somebody coming to take over.
Right. He rose to prominence in service of the same king, King Coolacane, and fought to unify Cyrodiil. The book declares that the true identity of the Underking at this point in time is Ysmir the Kingmaker. All right. So now we need to get into some other characters here. Are you ready for this?
All right. Let's get
it.
We got more people to add to the story.
Yeah. I mentioned Zarin Arctis, who is represented by good old Mike here.
The liar.
All right. So then we have Ysmir Kingmaker, represented by Diablo. And then we also have the Underking, represented by this glowing ghoul, right?
Okay, that's actually shockingly accurate to what I would picture the Underking. If you've ever seen, for anybody who doesn't know, the Elder Scrolls II Daggerfall, that hideous monstrosity on the cover, there's your Underking.
Yep.
Looks like a ghoul.
Looks kind of like a ghoul. It's kind of like this
looks
guy.
Looks kind of
right
like
here.
A ghoul.
Right. So we have this whole thing. I'm going to read the rest of this heresy section, but then we're going to discuss these other characters and what they might have to do with any of this. So it says, when the Greybeards spoke amidst rumblings of an individual who would defeat the elves and unify Tamriel with a restored empire, Ysmir, Diablo here, went to High Hrothgar, assuming he was the figure of prophecy. So Diablo, Ysmir, walks up the mountain, all billion steps or however many there were.
7,000 billion.
You know, billion. It's a thousand, but a billion steps.
All the same.
It makes the story more amazing. He walks up all a billion steps and he goes up to basically thinking he's the one they're talking about. He was blasted into ash by their voices, and it was instead the warrior youth, Hjalti Pikachu, who was...
Hjalti Pikachu.
Yeah, who was the fabled figure of prophecy. So basically, Ysmir walks up to the Greybeards and is like, hey, I'm the one the prophecy's talking about. And they're like, no, you're not. And then they blast him into ash.
I love that. Just like, okay, we'll call your bluff and then just obliterate
him, right? And then they're like, no, 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 Hjalti. Hjalti's the one that we've been wanting. So he blasts him to ash. Ysmir provided assistance to the young general, but the manner of his assistance is vaguely described. It states that a storm talked at night with Hjalti. I just dropped Pikachu and deflected arrows while Hjalti shouted down the wall of Old Hraldan, where Hjalti was given the name Talos. That's where Talos shows up. So originally in this version, he wasn't Talos to begin with. He was just this regular Hjalti Breton guy who does his thing. And he works with this guy, Ysmir, whose name may actually be Wolfhearth. I don't know. I need another guy to drop in here. So the Vault Dweller. Here's our Vault Dweller.
All
Wolf,
right,
Wolfhearth, right? So Wolfhearth and the Underking and I'm getting them all confused at this point. So we have Wolfhearth, the Underking. Oh, here's Diablo. And Ysmir may all be the same person.
Yeah, this is like the most extreme version of like who is who,
right?
Like, right, like, is this one person? Are these actually different people? Is it like,
right?
Because it seems like they all might just be a person,
right? So, because the stories also explain how Wolfhearth did the same thing, went to the went to the Greybeards, got blasted into ash. So Ysmir and Wolfhearth are probably the same person. So
it
these
seems
two
pretty likely, yeah,
probably the same person. So I'm just going to use Diablo from now on. So Diablo, Ysmir, Wolfhearth, same person, gets blasted into ash, not before he ends up helping Hjalti. But if he's also the Underking, then that means he somehow survives.
Right.
That's where things get super weird.
Some part of him is surviving.
Some part of him survives.
he's a little worse for wear.
Right, right. So he's falling. All these little guys are falling down on my desk. All right, I'm going to continue reading. It states that a storm talked to him at night and Hjalti and deflected the arrows. I talked about all of that. Yep. That's where
Hjalti
was.
The walls is pretty badass. Not going to lie. That's an intimidating sight when it's like, OK, well, this is going to require a siege. And you literally yell the wall down like,
yeah, oh,
all right. Like,
yeah,
maybe
cool.
We do surrender.
Pretty cool. And so that's why he was given the name Talos, which means storm crown. It was because of the storm of that night and destroying and using the weather and all of that by shouting and all of that. So he was given the name Talos by his men at that point. So these people would have known him as Hjalti originally and then given him a name that wasn't his birth name, but kind of a title, the storm crown. Notably, the book also refers to Ysmir as Ysmir the Grey Wind and the Storm of Kine. All of these people have so many different names. After the province was conquered, Hjalti murdered Kulakane. So Hjalti, in this case, little Pikachu here, is the reason Kulakane died, not an assassin, and his contingent on the Imperial City, and blamed the deaths and ensuing blaze on assassins from High Rock. Ysmir continued to aid in Hjalti's conquests, and Hjalti subsequently took the name Tiber Septim, ascending to the Ruby Throne. So, which version is actually real?
That's where it gets a little dicey.
Yeah. So that's where. So I think the thing that we have to realize here is that whatever side you're on, your version of the story is beneficial to the people who wrote their version of the story.
Right.
So neither side is a third party, is an objective third party on the situation.
Right. Everyone has their reasoning for it being the story they want to be put forward.
Right. Right. So if you're on the side of Talos, then you probably would rather have the orthodoxy side saying you're from Edmora, the home of the Nords. You're from this line of heroes that's called and was, you know, basically proclaimed by all of these myths in the past that you would be the coming emperor and the storm is going to be, you know, the thing that shows you that you're the one who they were expecting.
You're
all
literally
of that.
Chosen by the environment to be the ruler.
Right. That you go to the Greybeards and they give you even more power. They unlock your Thum, and then you use the Thum and everybody comes to your side, and then you take on, you know, the leadership after the king who eventually was trying to be emperor dies, right? Like, that totally makes your side look good and justified and prophesied. If you're not Talos, but you're somebody else, then you want to, if that side is true or if it's false, you want to tell a different story because it benefits you. Who would the heretical version benefit? It would benefit anybody who didn't want him to ascend to the throne, because they're like, oh, well, he's simply Hjalti Earlybeard. He took the throne. He killed the king. And
yeah, he's a usurper.
He's a usurper. And so therefore, he's a illegitimate ruler. He shouldn't have this much power. But who does that benefit the most? The Underking.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Underking was originally Ysmir, thought that he was the one who was supposed to be the dragonborn, the one that was going to come and take the throne, and then he gets blown to ash, but he somehow survives. So how does he survive? That's a good question.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to wriggle around death in the series, be they magical or other types of intervention, like divine or whatever. But getting blasted into ash usually is a pretty concrete end to stuff.
Right.
That ends up being what supposedly happened.
Right. But there are souls, and souls are things that can be put into gems, and they can even be rebodied at times. There's a lot of these other ways that those things can work out. So I have some theories, and I've saved the theories. And now that we have these two different understandings of the background of who Talos, who Tiber Septim was, we're going to take a quick break. We have to go thank our patrons, but I'm going to get into the different theories, and I've got some ideas that I think Rob the Princess in chat is super going to be super excited about, this because it has to do with the prisoner and it has to do with Lorcan and some other things. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. Thank you so much for being here, for being part of the live chat, and for listening to the show and being around for so long. And big shout out to all of our patrons, including our Daedric Princes, who get shout outs every week, Blinding Vision, Kirasi, and Sheogorath Sweet Roll. Thank you so much for your support. And to all 109 of our current active patrons, thank you so much. If you are interested in getting ad-free episodes, t-shirts and stickers, joining us on future patron chats, all sorts of cool stuff, go to patreon.com/elderscrollslorecast. Go check out all that stuff. Also, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And every time I go back and look at this, I still see the one that says, "Too bad about Lotus. Fly high, brother."
Uh-oh. Yes.
So
my very, very nice obituary.
Yeah. So we need somebody to post another one. But if you leave a 5-star review, then we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. And eventually I won't have to keep looking at the fake death of Lotus in our.
Well, like I said, at reviews. Least it was a nice review. It wasn't like, touching. Man, at least Lotus is dead.
Right. I'm so glad that guy's gone.
You're like, oh, man.
Right. So please go do that. We'll read out your 5-star reviews on future episodes. You can also rate the show on Spotify or whatever podcatcher you listen to this on. And if you have friends who play Elder Scrolls Online or Skyrim or whatever, feel free to share the show with them. It really does help us out. So thanks for being here. Thanks for doing all that. All right, let's move on because I've got some theories. Here we go.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
The kick me sticker fell off of Tiber Septim here. There he goes. It's back on him.
Perfect.
All right. So we've got all of that stuff out of the way. Now, there are other characters. There's Zurn Arctis, who he kind of shows up out of nowhere in the stories and becomes the battle mage for Tiber Septim. And they're like good buddies. They work together, right? They're like these two very powerful individuals.
Basically his number one.
His number one. Who does number two work for? Who's number one work for? That's the... the joke from Austin Powers. I always think about that whenever I hear something like that. Who does number? Okay. So they're good buddies. Zurn Arctis shows up out of nowhere seemingly in the story and is like battle mage to Tiber Septim. He's one of his closest confidants. He's the one who recommends they go talk to the tribunal. I think he may even have been the one that actually negotiated getting the Numidium.
I think so. Somebody can correct us if we're wrong, but I think you're right.
I'm pretty sure he's the one who does that. There is a lot of circumstantial evidence that says that maybe Zurin Arctos is actually the Underking also. Is Ysmir, is Wolfharth?
Wolfharth.
That they're all the same person. So somehow he's blasted into ash, right? Wolfharth slash Ysmir blasted into ash by the Greybeards, but yet comes back.
Yeah, we scoop him up.
Maybe he was a necromancer. Maybe he found a way.
I mean, if he's already like such an adept battle mage, one would assume that he did not become such an adept battle mage like in last year when he becomes, you know, second in command here. So most likely he would have been a battle mage to a degree. So it's like, okay, well, what if he was prepping himself to be a lich or something like that?
Right.
You know what I mean? There's that chance where it's like, okay, what's my backup plan if things don't go so well for me? I maybe need to have a phylactery somewhere and start prepping for this. And it's like, okay, I get blasted in ash. Hey, here's my backup plan. I'm kind of decomposing and gross, but at least I'm still there.
Right, I'm still there. So he shows up, Zurin Arctos. Eventually, they get the Numidium. They need a way to power it. He creates a gem that can power it, but it needs a soul. It needs a soul that is powerful enough to actually run the Numidium. What did the Numidium run on before? It ran on Lorkhan's heart. Who is Lorkhan again? He was the trickster god who convinced the other Aedra to create everything. Reality, Mundus, all of that.
Yeah, that's a pretty expensive battery that there aren't, I don't think, where there's a lot of those in supply.
What did they end up using instead? What Tiberceptum ends up using is Zurin Arctus's soul inside the gem that powers the Numidium. How is Zurin Arctus's soul powerful enough to power the Numidium?
Right. You would think not just a standard mortal somebody would have that. Like that, it seems unlikely that those are equivalent, because we know in this world, souls have like tiers of value, because there's literally greater soul gems, lesser soul gems, common soul gem, and they fit the corresponding sized soul. So I doubt severely that the heart of Lorkhan is equivalent to, you know, the local merchant at the stores,
or even just this really powerful wizard guy's soul. It's like, right? This or even a very like, powerful lich's soul.
This is literally god heart to some type of mortal soul. So you'd think this has got to be pretty extreme when it comes to like power level.
Right. Right. So, okay. So, and we can go into further details. In fact, this might be something that we want to come back and dig a little bit deeper in on future episodes. But in doing my research for all this, I had a theory. And the theory goes that, I guess I'll just give away the, I don't know what the phrase is. Give away the goat. I don't know.
I think it's give away the farm or the something. I don't know what it is.
But here's the idea. I'm giving something away. All right. So let's take this from the perspective of Lorkhan. Lorkhan gets killed. The Aedra stand up against him. He gets his heart removed. It's tossed into the ocean. It becomes Red Mountain, right?
Makes a really great song.
Right. The Dwemer and the Kymer find the heart. There's all that stuff that goes on with the whole heart. The Numidium gets created by the Dwemer. The Dwemer disappear out of reality. The power from the heart gets used by the Tribunal to turn them into basically gods. The heart is gone by the end of all that, right? And so they need something else to power the Numidium. What did Lorkhan want? Lorkhan wanted to create a world that was mortal, a mortal world for mortals to live in. Who is the race that most identifies with that? Men, humans, not the elves, not the beast races, men, right? This is why the high elves are so anti-Talos, is because he's a god who represents mankind.
Yeah, he's literally an affront to their existence.
Right, right. What else do we know that Lorkhan does in, like, now that he's been dead, there is rumor that he has individuals that show up that are aspects of Lorkhan that are basically his remnants walking around Earth. Vivek runs into one in Morrow, and the Nerevar run into one, right?
Sure.
So there are these aspects of Lorcan that are embodied in people who are walking around. What if one of those aspects is Zurin Arctos / the Underking / Ysmir / Wolfhearth? That's why he didn't die. He gets blasted by the Greybeards, but he doesn't die because he's actually Lorcan. And Lorcan's soul is then put into the gem that powers the Numidium. That's why it has enough power to
power that.
Right. Tiber Septim then uses the Numidium to conquer all of Tamriel, right?
Sure.
But it's also been said that Tiber Septim and Zurin Arctos are two parts of a whole. That's one of the things that comes up in the in these old documents and in rumors. Yep. This idea that there are two heads to the beast, like this whole thing. I don't remember the specific language. We can dig into that later. But he's part of that as well. So what if Zurin Arctos / all of those names? So all I'm not going to pick up all the characters.
Yeah, I was
going
to say all those names / MD.
Right. So they are all like this aspect of Lorcan, but also Tiber Septim / Talos / Hjalti Earlybeard is also a physical manifestation of Lorcan. And it's only, even though there's sometimes conflict between these two, there's different versions of the stories because they're both individuals, they're still working ultimately for the same goal, which is to conquer Tamriel for mankind. And then eventually, because of the combination of those two powers, they return to godhood. Basically, they are the return of Lorcan to godhood, embodied now in Talos.
I see what you're saying. So there's just like the reason there's 10 zillion versions of all of this is because it's the fractured aspects of Lorcan basically working to combine back together for the sake of achieving the goal of humanizing, for lack of a better word, Tamriel.
Right, right. An immortal who's like Ysmir, who gets destroyed by blown to ashes, isn't ever fully destroyed because he's still the remnants of a god. And so he re-embodies himself as Zurin Arctos until he can no longer do that because his soul gets trapped in a gem. But then at some point, he also is working as the Underking. But the Underking, there's so little information about the Underking because he's secretive. He's like this lich-like character. And we don't really have a good grasp of like where he comes in and out of stories. There's all this like weird mythology. Sometimes it's before the Third Age. Sometimes it's during the events that happen with Tiber Septim and all of that. He's like this figure that's kind of sprinkled in, but maybe just through just misunderstanding on some level.
Yeah. A lot of times it almost feels like, how do we explain this? Oh, you know what? It's probably Talos, or it's Hjalti Earlybeard. Like, it's almost like he becomes the de facto, like, well, something really impressive happened. Got to be this dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and so the Underking is involved, or Zurin Arctos is involved. But in basically going through all of that, what it does is it enables all of the things that Lorcan originally wanted to happen, the uniting of an empire under man in Tamriel, and the returning to the station of a god. He becomes the ninth divine, and he's not called Lorcan anymore. He's called Talos, which is why the High Elves don't like him. That's why they want to stop Talos worship, right?
Right.
Right. Now, let's take this one step further. If this wasn't meta enough already, or like confusing enough already, what if let's zoom this out to another layer? What do the prisoners have to do with the series of games? In the three most recent games, you start as a prisoner. In most of the games, even in Daggerfall, there's this reference to that your character probably once a prisoner, even the start in a cave.
Yeah, you don't overtly start as a prisoner. You're kind of like a lackey, for lack of a better word.
Right.
But like, yeah, the first game, you're a prisoner as well. And the second one's implied, maybe you were a prisoner prior. That's the only one where you don't overtly start in like breaking out of prison. You're trapped on an island or in a cave, like after a crappy storm doing something. But the prisoner thing is pretty common throughout at least the numbered games.
Right. So let's real quickly, we could probably dive into this in another separate episode totally about the prisoner, but what does the prisoner represent? It represents somebody who understands that they are confined, that there are walls around them, that they have to get out of. They have to somehow escape this prison. They are the people who are awake enough in the world to realize that the walls are even there. But they are also the person who can see through the bars on the gate and see that there are things outside the prison. So that right. they are the ones who can actually deal with the fact that this world is a prison and then somehow escape it. They are the ones who can act, and their actions actually can change the course of the world as opposed to everyone else. This is a really clever way of saying everyone else in the world is NPCs, and there are only ever a few characters that are actually player characters who can make decisions that change how everything actually works.
Right, which gets super fourth wall breaking, weird meta stuff of like, okay, the player is literally the defining factor in the game.
Right. Right. So let's move this out another layer. How did Elder Scrolls start? It started with a D&D session from the original creators of Arena.
Right.
This was a continuation of the world that they were building. I want to posit an idea that these characters that we're talking about, Talos, Hjalti Earlybeard, Zurn Arctos, Ysmir, the Underking maybe even, were player characters in their D&D campaign. That their original D&D campaign was based around the rise of Tiber Septim to power and how that worked out. And
okay.
And so Talos, Tiber Septim, Ysmir, Wolfhearth,
Earlybeard, the whole mess of them.
All of those characters were probably player made characters. They weren't NPCs designed by the dungeon master. They were player characters in the story. And over the arc of the story, they all did things that forwarded the actual development of the story of who Tiber Septim was and how he became a god. I would posit, and I don't have any proof for this, but I think that that part was at least in some way part of the original campaign. And so when this became a video game, they needed to justify, okay, who are these characters and why did they all have such an ability to actually change the world? Well, they were all prisoners. They were all player characters. They were all characters who had that ability because they were originally run by humans. And just sure. like we can now enter that world through these other games, we can also play a prisoner who can change the world. And so it makes sense if you take all of the previous player characters and you combine them into this one story, which unifies that entity, the combination of all the player characters, into a deity that now looks down upon their creation that we get to play in as prisoners.
That's pretty cool. I like that actually quite a bit. And especially with how a lot of the series has evolved, like kind of almost from necessity. Mm-hmm. The biggest one is the multiple endings to Daggerfall as a result of essentially giving themselves. They wrote themselves. The joke is a lot of times you write yourself into a corner. The problem is with the multiple endings and them wanting to continue the series off, they wrote themselves into a giant field where there was just a bunch of different directions and like, okay, well now what do we do?
Yeah.
So as a direct result of that, they created the idea of like Dragon Breaks, where it's like, well, all these things happened and none of them happened. Like there's right. splits.
Right. Because so once they incorporated a actual video game that player characters could jump into, where right. now you have thousands and thousands of prisoners who all have their own version of a story, they have yeah. to somehow justify that.
And it's that's interesting because that's been shown to be a thing in the series. So the idea that because this was based on their tabletop game, it's like, okay, well, our characters all exist, but they also all kind of need to fill the same thing, but from mm-hmm. different aspects. So I think that's pretty cool. I like that. Yeah. I think that's more sound than I was planning on what you were about to tell me.
Because I throw out crazy ideas all the time.
You do. And maybe and oftentimes maybe. I agree. Sometimes I'm like, I appreciate that.
But
that one I think is pretty cool. And again, it's one of those things that with this is kind of like less in-game lore, more just like series construction. I feel like that actually almost vibes with the way a lot of the way the series has been crafted, like in regards to multiple endings or why are there so many of the vestiges running around in Elder Scrolls Online,
right.
like stuff like that. this kind of coincides with some of those ideas in just a different way of like, how do we make these relevant at the same time?
Yeah, you just gave me you gave me an idea on top of the idea I'm about to say.
Okay.
Because I have another idea still. So what that means is if all of us as player characters are the prisoner, then we are also aspects of Lorcan.
Right.
Every single one of us. So if we are all aspects of Lorcan, then during the interregnum, during the events of Elder Scrolls Online, you have all of these vestiges, which are also aspects of Lorcan. But it's as if Lorcan's attempt to force what he wanted to happen in Tamriel by expanding himself to thousands and thousands of individuals didn't actually work. It just created more chaos.
Right.
So by the end of the events of Elder Scrolls Online, whenever that ends, he gives up on that strategy and instead attempts the strategy with Hjalti and Ysmir, and he only plays the part of a few individuals to see if is more effective.
Time to rein it back in. Yeah. Having we'll go with the joke of like marketing on top of that. With 24 million vestiges currently that have signed up for Elder Scrolls Online.
Right.
Lorcan might have seen the scenario as like, okay, too many vestiges, too much chaos.
Right, he overexpanded himself. He's the trickster god.
Some of them split timelines.
Yeah, some of them just want to wear shiny pants and dance on top of buildings in marketplaces. You know, like
exactly. Where it's like, okay, the direction that we're going to get to where I want this ain't working, so we're gonna just scale this back. Mm-hmm. And now maybe we'll try a couple versions that it's a little more manageable.
Yeah. Yeah. Hercene asked in chat, do you think Starfield was inspired by the Traveler's game Todd Howard played? Probably. I know definitely it was inspired by the game, but maybe his specific game? Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. Everybody takes inspiration from something. Like, we are all building on top of other ideas. This is one of the things, one of the arguments that I find funny about AI is that it, and by no means is this, please don't take this out of context. I feel if you are a creator, if you are an artist, if you're a voice actor, absolutely, people should not be stealing your stuff. Period.
100%.
Yeah, period.
I don't think there's any debate from the show on that.
but from the perspective of how do minds work and how does creation work? A human mind and an artificial mind both have to reference previous things for inspiration in order to create future things. You can't create from nothing, right? AI can't create from nothing. Human minds can't create from nothing. If I'm writing a song, I'm referencing in some way songs that I've heard before, whether I'm actually aware of it or just subconsciously doing it, I still have to be referencing something. So in this case, I would imagine when you're creating a video game for the first time, you're going to be referencing something. We've talked about the D&D references early in this. There are, if you look at Arena,
they were much stronger at the beginning. Elder Scrolls found its uniqueness. I mean, there was always some there. And I always joke when I refer to the oldest games in the series, specifically Arena, really. The bones of what we see are there. It's totally, but it's like a house with no walls because so much of it, it's like, okay, the support structures are things we know about in the series and have stuck with. All the drywall is just places called Merkmire or Merkwood, and it's like, okay, well, this is...
They're clearly referencing Lord of the Rings, Wizardry, Ultima, like these 80s adventure RPG games.
Right.
Dungeons & Dragons. Like, you can see where their references are from a technical standpoint, but then from a story standpoint, there's a little bit of course, Lord of the Rings in there, too. But I would imagine there's probably more of that original Dungeons & Dragons campaign in Arena and... The other games for that matter too.
Right.
Because they had to pull from something, right?
Yeah. And then it involved like they evolved the series going forward where a lot of the stuff that was kind of directly pulled a little bit, like almost like borderline, sometimes like, is that even like a copyright thing that's so close? But those kind of fell by the wayside and some of the more creative aspects got fleshed out that were unique. And it's like, but you always have the basis involved so much of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So that's my crazy theory about Tiber Septim and Lorcan and all of that. But it like also that. Is the history of who Tiber Septim may or may not be. I think maybe, I don't know. If you were to put your foot down, Lotus, and say the Orthodox view, the Arcturian heresy view, somewhere in between, where would you end up on that?
I would probably go with somewhere in between. Because especially with this series, like you said, we don't have a God's eye view into storytelling with the Elder Scrolls. Mm-hmm. So when stories are always from within the world itself and the people of the world, you know, like we just talked about, you're going to get your slant, whatever that slant may be. Mm-hmm. So this has always long struck me as, yeah, okay, there was probably somebody who did this. Well, another person might have done this. You know what? Now they're one person. That one person did both of these things.
Right.
And it's like, well, those were two different events. But it's like, no, no, no. It's way cooler, though, if we make one unified idea of some awesome dude who did all of these things.
I mean, rather than
people did these things. It's like, well, no, no. But one of them makes him sound like, okay, so he's God Emperor of the world. It's like,
I mean, we still see it in our own world where people... We get this like cult mindset around people that whether they're rock stars or politicians or whatever. And if you actually look at the literal truth of their lives and the things they do, they're very real human beings with a lot of regular flaws and all sorts of things. But if you ask the people who like idolize them, those things don't exist. It doesn't matter if there's facts out there that say like, oh, well, this rock star was terrible and, you know, abused women or whatever. On some level, for some people, they're past that point. The facts don't matter. It's more about who the person is in their mind. And that is the truth to them. So to have a character like Talos, who becomes Tiber Septim, and have them idealized and then all of a sudden whitewashed. Oh, well, they didn't come from High Rock. They came from Atmora. Because that sounds more important, and all of these things totally make sense. But at the same time, somebody who like the Underking is also going to have a lot of benefits from downplaying that person's divinity or prophecyhood or whatever. And their version of the story is going to whitewash other things. And so you end up with this like, well, what is the truth? Well, like you said, it's probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. And it happens so much in the series, or seems like it does, because again, it's all from, but it's like referring to the whole, you know, situation where they were dealing with the tribunal. The tribunal itself has this whole cloud around it.
Yeah.
It's like, are they gods? Are they like awful assassins who killed their friend? And it's like, it all depends.
Maybe a little bit of both.
But
that's what's so cool about the series is that like, this is real. This is how like the versions and the stories of people like Julius Caesar, like within his lifetime. And then like even just a few generations after, compared to the things that came out later that we were able to actually justify, like they're not the same stories.
They're not the same story.
They're not. Any religious figure you pick, and I mean, any famous religious figure, the version that you get from the orthodoxy and the people who are the most, invested in that character, and the other things that you can get from scientific and historical evidence, typically don't sync up very much. And there's a reason for that. It's because human beings are human beings, and we all kind of handle our stories in the same similar ways. And ultimately what this means is the myth of the story, the storytelling, how it actually makes you feel, the spirit of it is more important to us as human beings than the facts of the situation most of the time, because we are feeling creatures that sometimes think.
Yes.
And that's just the truth of it. And
it's why
it happens in Elder Scrolls too. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes effort to be aware of the difference, and why I actually joke a lot of times. It's like, oftentimes people don't use logic when determining things. They're governed too much by emotion.
Yeah, we all are. We all are.
It's like
every single human
consciously realize like, okay, is this an emotional response, or is there a reason that it's like, okay, logically, does this make sense? Even if my gut reaction is, I hate this. Well, okay, actually, maybe I don't. But unless you force yourself to think about that, you might just have a visceral reaction that's totally not based on anything, but it's how you feel. So it's that extra step that sometimes, you know, you've got to be willing to do to make things actually stay as grounded in factual things as you can. And when you're trying to tell a story to get a certain group to believe something, well, there's not a lot of incentive to do that. There's more incentive to
tell a story that elicits emotion than sticks to the facts. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, every single time. That's just the way we are. But it's so cool that the writers of this series understand that, and that's what we get in these stories. But so there you go. That's Talos, Hjalti yeah. earlier. How do you feel about that, Pikachu, Hjalti?
Pikachu looks pretty like he would have an early beard, so it looks pretty.
look at that face.
Yeah, it's a clean shaven.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. Lotus, you got anything else you want to share before we head out? I hope you guys enjoyed that weird.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope everybody enjoyed that. Tom didn't give me a heads up on his wacky theory, which I actually greatly enjoyed. And I think holds a decent amount of credence. That I think it's kind of a neat theory that fits with so much of the way the series is written.
And maybe it's not actual, like the actual truth. Sure, I'm sure somebody out there can be like, well, these are the aspects from a D&D campaign. These things weren't, we wrote these in.
Right.
But there's something about it that feels like maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. It feels like there might be more than a few threads of truth to that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, other than that, I've just been, we were a bit behind on our episode of Tales just because I've been very busy and trying to organize schedules has been tricky. However, the idea is this weekend we'll have a fresh episode of the unofficial Elder Scrolls Pages Tales of Tamriel for everybody. So look for that in the coming week. But yeah, other than that, I've just been busy, so I haven't had as much game time, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Well, go check out Tales of Tamriel. Thank you for being here. If you are into this show and you also are excited about the Fallout TV show, I do the Fallout Lorecast. If you want to brush up on your lore, it's going to be good.
I don't want to say cautiously optimistic because I also sort of hate that phrase because it's super overused, but I'm actually pretty excited to think that I think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the latest trailer. I'm shocked to think that because... Yeah. I have been super skeptical on just like not hearing anything about it. Mm-hmm. And after the trailer is like, ooh, this actually has potential here. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they get it. I think they get the spirit of it, and I'm excited. So yeah, I've been doing some episodes. In fact, the episode that goes up tomorrow is about my list of creatures that I want to see in the TV show at some point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And why I want to see them and how I think they might get revealed in a way that's super fun. So I hope people enjoy that episode as well. But yeah, go check out my other shows over at robotsradio.net. If you need links or whatever you're listening to this on, just look up the Fallout Lorecast or the Lord of the Rings Lorecast or anything else if you want to get into those other shows. Lots of cool stuff. And then also other people on my network as well, other creators doing their own shows over at robotsradio.net. Lots of cool stuff. Go check that stuff out.
And to close out, thank you, Hearsene. We need a random Elder Scrolls page.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we do.
Speaking of the UESP.
This is why Hearsene needs to be here in chat every time to remind us.
Perfect.
All right, here we go. I got to find
where the random button go. Prince, and I appreciate you.
Where's the random button? Did they move it?
Oh, did they move
it? Oh, there it is. I see it. I found it. No, they didn't move it. I'm just an idiot. Okay, here we go. Here's the random. This is our random UESP page. Online: Audremart Petit. Audremart Petit is a Breton priest of Zenithar who can be found on the roads around Tamriel. He can only be found during the Zeal of Zenithar events as a random encounter. You want to hear some of the things he says?
Yes, because what?
When approached, he'll say one of two things. Either, Zenithar, provider of our ease, I fear your ways are little understood. Help me see that your teachings are known in these lands. Or, oh, Zenithar, god of coin and commerce, show me that your wares are not forgotten in these greedy times.
All right.
Yeah, he loves Zenithar.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a lot of dialogues. Goes down quite
really?
A ways. Yeah.
I assume like 97% of it is just praising Zenithar.
It's good to see you again, student of Zenithar. Blah 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 blah.
I mean, I guess how in line is that though with it when you're like, oh yeah, my patron deity is Zenithar, so I literally never stop talking about Zenithar because then I'd stop working.
Right, yeah. Zenithar comes to you on your deathbed and asks what accomplishment you're the most proud of completing your lifetime. What is your answer? The integrity of your family name, the wealth growing in your coffer, or the land you amassed? And then you can answer different things. And if you say the land I amassed, he says, that's not quite correct. And he goes on. If you say the coins in my coffer, he says, that's not quite correct. And he goes on about why. And then if you say the integrity of my family name, he goes, yes, you understand my questions correctly. And he gets all excited. So yeah, there you go. It's a character you can meet in ESO. Andromard on Audremard, Audremard, petite. So there you go.
Love it.
Thanks, Tercine, for the reminder.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Thank you for being here. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And I don't know if you think our idea has any or crazy actual, I don't know. What's the word? Not evidence. Feel like it might be real. If you're worshiping Talos, then you're actually worshiping Larkon and you're also worshiping yourself. That's super weird. All right.
I love it. That was, you know, what was the best part about that message to take away? How concise it flowed.
It did not flow well at all, but I got there. All right. Have a wonderful night, everybody. See you all later.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.